Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good evening, America. Welcome to Dialogue with the Raucous Caucus. I am hosting tonight. My name is Mark Levine, and I am here with
Garland Nixon
and Terry D. Kessler.
And I will try to keep the caucus slightly less raucous. Nah, well, who am I kidding? Yeah, who am I kidding? Well, I can't control y'all if I wanted to. But the question tonight.
You don't want to.
I really don't want to.
No.
Well, you maybe.
To the streets.
The question tonight is one that is racking the Republican Party.
Oh.
It is one where Michael Steele cannot tell which is worse. And so I don't know. Let's ask the question honestly. Which is worse? Advocating Jim Crow laws, supporting making blacks as second-class citizens in the Constitution for the rest of American history, oh, and raping a 16-year-old black girl in the 1920s, that, or calling the president
light-skinned.
And saying he has no Negro dialect. According to Michael Steele, the chairman of the Republican Party.
It's equal.
A black man, perhaps the only black man in the Republican Party, I don't know, that the sins are equal. And in fact, advocating Jim Crow and supporting making Jim Crow the law of the land is the same as saying that Barack Obama can actually win an election because he's a light-skinned man with no Negro dialect unless he wants one, which is a direct quote from the new book out about Harry Reid. According to Michael Steele, it's an egregious double standard. And so I want to read
again. But it's because
again,
of Lott, right?
Well, I want to read again what Trent Lott said.
Okay.
Because
hi, Trent.
Michael Steele
he's probably listening.
Says
I'm sure.
it's an egregious double standard. All right. Mm-hmm. He says that that Reid has to resign as majority leader because
I'm going to suggest hanging or drawing quarter into something.
Because Lott had to resign as majority leader. I actually remember when that happened. It took weeks and maybe even a month to convince him to resign.
I actually remember when Lott was with the Singing Senators and I had to work with that group.
That sounds very painful.
Yes.
Let me read to you an exact quote from what Trent Lott said on the occasion of the 100th birthday of Senator Strom Thurmond, who, of course, was famous as running on the Dixiecrat ticket.
And Strom Thurmond is the one you're talking about in terms of
support of segregation.
Right.
But here's what Lott said, quote, "When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years either." Problems. There's so many problems. Equality, fair treatment,
voting.
The blacks and the whites going to the same schools.
Black presidents.
The lines are longer at voting booths because blacks can vote too.
Water fountains.
We wouldn't have had water fountains. That's right.
We wouldn't have to worry about that stuff.
But according to Michael Steele, The black man of the Republican Party, the leader of the Republican Party, Jim Crow laws, segregation, all of that is equivalent to saying of white people, which is what Reid was saying, of white people, that white people are more likely to vote for a light-skinned black man than a dark-skinned black man and more likely to vote for a man without a strong black sense.
But you've got to give Michael some slack here. I mean, he's trying to compete with Sarah Palin.
You're right.
And let's face it.
You've got to say some extreme thing.
Yeah, he just can't hold his own. I mean, you know, Sarah's not going to be on Fox, you know, as a pundit.
Oh, that's going to be beautiful.
I wonder, poor Michael's just out there babbling in the wilderness.
Let me suggest to you, gentlemen, that I agree with Senator Reid. Now, I would not have used his phrasing. Actually, the word Negro is a bit archaic, even though certainly in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was used by Langston Hughes and Richard Wright and Ralph Ellison and all the great Negro authors. I say that word because they didn't call themselves African-American because that term wasn't used in the 1950s and 1960s.
Yeah.
They called themselves Negroes.
Or colored.
Or colored. Mm-hmm. And maybe Michael Steele doesn't understand that that's not the N-word that we're referring to. It's a different word. Here's the thing. Michael Steele obviously gets it. He's not that stupid.
He's stupid, but not
stupid.
He's pretty stupid.
Every black person in America and every intelligent non-black person in America,
there's six of them,
understands there is a difference between Jim Crow laws and using an archaic term for black.
Yeah. Well, let's keep in mind something else too. As I brought up earlier. My mother, she passed away, God rest her soul, was 88. She used the term colored That's what, she was 88. She used the word colored.
She
colored
might have
people.
Been part of the National Association of colored people.
She used the word colored. Why? People. Because when she grew up, that's the word she'd say. Well, when I grew up, that's the term. I never really got comfortable with anything else because that's what we were called back then. So
but that's
70,
a crime equivalent to Jim Crow.
You're right.
So, Michael Steele says so. And he's a black man. He must know what he's talking about. He speaks on behalf of all black Republicans.
You know,
all three of them.
Take into account, A, he's 70 years old. B, he was one of the first people to tell Barack Obama, I think you got a chance at winning this thing.
He encouraged him to run.
C, and this is the big one. You know, there's an old saying that says, what you are speaks much louder than what you say. Trent Lott voted against Martin Luther King's birthday.
Yep.
What he has done, his voting record, the issues that he has supported or not supported, clearly support the statement he made and makes the context appear racist.
Trent Lott voted for Strom Thurmond.
Right.
And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, according to Lott, we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years either. That's
and
just
also
as bad as calling him a light-skinned
person. And the context of Reed, as I understand it, was actually in a discussion, you know, about, you know, whether or not Obama could win.
That's right.
And he was just trying to analyze it and saying, you know, well, I don't know. Is he going to appeal to the African-Americans because he is light-skinned? You know, I mean, is he going
to... No, actually, I took his comment as saying he would appeal to white folk
better. Both. It's both.
Because, and it's here's the interesting thing that I've learned.
But it was
in
a discussion. And
right.
It was in a discussion and, a, you know... And just,
well, and I got to add this
his
in. I got to add this in. On the very, this very, very station, on the air,
uh-oh,
I had Paul Robeson Jr. on.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, Barack Obama couldn't get elected if he looked and sounded like Jesse Jackson. Now, I think
Paul Robeson's
Paul
a racist.
Robeson Jr.
He's equivalent to Jim Crow.
That
I think he needs to resign from all majority positions.
That proves he cannot be majority leader.
You're right.
That's it.
I mean, a person who comes from
point.
That lineage.
I actually agree with Reed. You know, there's interesting.
Everybody knows that's true.
Look, it's
bad.
A you may
it's
not
unfortunate.
Like it.
I don't like it, but
the
it's a reality.
The people Reed was were insulting were white people. That's what's
yes,
interesting
absolutely.
About his comment. He was insulting white people. He was saying white people are more racist against dark-skinned black people than light-skinned black people. That white people are more racist against black folks
does
with
this
a
mean,
strong
does it,
black sense.
Does this mean that the white people being the majority have to resign?
I think what it means is that,
almost all white
is that right. Michael it's Steele tough. Is okay right. with Jim Crow laws, but he's not okay with insulting white
well,
people.
Well, you know, Michael Steele is a desperate man. I mean, he truly is. I mean, in his position, I mean, to begin with, I mean, the only reason he is there is like is to give some kind of legitimacy to the Republican Party that they occasionally care about the poor African American. I mean, he is strictly a figurehead, and he knows he's a figurehead, and no Republican in any official position whatsoever is going to listen to what Michael Steele says in terms of the campaigns or anything else. He is nothing but he's there for show and for no other reason, and he knows it.
What a great irony. The only reason that Michael Steele is where he is because of the color
because
of
he's
his
black.
Skin.
Yeah,
there is,
that's right.
There's no way. They had to do.
You
they,
said that on the
right,
air?
They yeah. had to
Garland,
have
you can't be a majority leader either.
They had to have
I'm
what?
Sorry. No. That's just like advocating
right.
Jim Crow.
I mean,
you can't say that.
They had to have either 5 or 6 votes to get him in. The only reason he's there, mysteriously after all of these, you know, since 1856 or whenever, the 1856 when the Republican Party was formed, since then, they have never had a black leader until, what do you know, 2 weeks after the first African-American president
is
inaugurated,
a miracle.
They decide.
A miracle, actually a miracle.
So he's only there because he's black, and everyone knows it.
Here's what I find so fascinating, and I want to throw out our numbers and let our callers join in the discussion.
Don't throw it out. Let's use it.
The numbers?
Sorry.
It works so far, Mark.
Try to keep up, Mark. Come on.
202. 588-0893.
Hey, wait a minute. Before we get callers, we forgot to mention what is going to happen
oh my
on
gosh.
February 2nd.
We'll get there. We'll
get
there.
Let's get there now. It's the most
right.
exciting
all
thing
right,
in the
all
world.
All right. Okay, Terry, you can talk.
Okay, we will be beginning on February 2nd. We will launch our pledge drive. We're going to be at Ben's Next Door in a live audience show.
Which is right next door to Ben's Chili
right
Bowl.
Next to Ben's Chili
and
Bowl.
You can watch us
and
live.
You can come
you can throw your punches. No, wait, no, I didn't say
no,
that.
No, but
no,
you
no.
can come
only
and ask
verbal what, punches.
You can ask questions live. We're going to be doing a live show at Ben's Next Door on Tuesday, February 2nd. That's our first one there at 7 o'clock on the air. You can be on the air with us on the air. We got meet and greet afterwards. We're going to have a ball. You got to be there. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
It certainly will. And I got to say, you know, it'll be the best pledge drive ever.
It will be a great chance.
Anyone who wants to pledge, if you want to pledge, you can just bring your pledge there, shake our hands, and we'll say thank you.
Just throw money at us. We'll pick it up.
We will give you more details as that date advances.
How many more details are there? Well, February 2nd, 7 o'clock. Ben's
we'll think of something. Come on. 202-580-8893.
Wait a minute. 588-0893.
202-588-0893. Here's my question
Unity,
for you.
I love unity.
No, you don't.
You can't have a community without unity or something like that. Okay.
Should you and I just talk to each other? We're doing pretty good here.
Rush Limbaugh, remember him?
Oh.
Had a song called Barack the Magic Negro. Michael Steele, you may recall, had no problem with it.
Well, of course not.
Because at that point,
Michael Steele didn't know he was black.
Let me explain the difference. It's very simple. When you mock black people using the word Negro, that's okay for the Republicans. What's not okay, however, is to accuse white people of being racist. Because that's what Reid did, in effect. He said that there are some voters who are more racist against dark-skinned blacks than light-skinned blacks. And there's an interesting thing. They checked it out. They did a study at CNN, a fascinating study. They raised it. I saw it. Where they took voters and they had McCain supporters and Obama supporters. This is prior to this event during the election. And they showed various photos of Obama. They showed a very light-skinned Obama, the regular photo of Obama, and a very dark-skinned Obama. They played with his skin pigment. Here's a very interesting statistic because I think it draws into what Harry Reid had to say, like it or not. Obama supporters thought he was more, on average, more light-skinned than he really is. And McCain supporters thought he was more dark-skinned than he really is.
Isn't that an interesting psychological thing?
That's the way the brain works.
That's the way the Republican brain works.
The sad thing is that Harry Reid, I think, was telling the truth. Now, he should have used a more up-to-date word. But other than that, he was telling the truth.
And, you know, here's the thing about it. If we are in the halls of Congress, if we're in the back room somewhere with a politician, if you have a corporation or a company and you're sitting in the back room and you want to sell widgets, you need to talk about reality. You know what I mean? You need to sit down and say, well, you know, most black people aren't going to buy this widget unless we add this to it, if that's a reality.
He said it in private.
Sitting there and he's saying, look, you know, this guy can get to be elected. What do you think? Well, you know, he's light-skinned and he doesn't have, you know, what do you think? And you're kicking back and you're talking about reality in order to get your candidate and your party elected. You need to talk about the truth.
The other question it has to be asked.
And do you have a Negro diet?
I do. I'll tell you, listen, I ain't voting for Terry.
Mixed blood over here.
I'm not voting for him. Yeah.
But here's the other question, and I think, you know, we're part of the problem here in a sense. You know, who gives a damn? I mean, when you get right down to it, I mean, how could – this has no significance whatsoever. The fact that media is involved in this and been going on and on about it for umpteen days is absurd.
But media is involved because Michael Steele says it's the same thing. It's advocating Jim Crow.
No, I would say something else.
He says he should resign because Lott was making
And Terry's making a good point, and that is the fact that there is so much discussion of this. You know what I mean? The fact that people aren't – look, you know, we'll be where we need to be when somebody says that and nobody even notices it. You know what I mean? Nobody even notices. It's like, oh, well, you know, well, it's like saying, you know, well, they won't vote for him because he has brown hair instead of red hair. But we're focusing on it because America does, in fact, still have such a fixation on race.
Here's my view, and this is what I want to get from our listeners. I want to see if they agree. I think that if you are racially conscious, that is a normal, natural state to say, for example, you're meeting my friend outside the theater. What does he look like? He's a light-skinned black man, you know?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Whereas if you say, I can't mention race, he's wearing a blue sweatshirt, that you are actually being so racially aware that you're actually being stupid.
You're being irrational.
You're being irrational. But Republicans don't have black friends, so they don't understand that. So for them, advocating segregation
is the same thing as saying
light-skinned
black man. Poor Michael Steele has no friends in the Republican Party.
I don't know if that
brings up a good point. Michael Steele is the same guy who doesn't have a problem with top officials in the Republican Party going to these teabagger movements where they hold up a picture of Barack Obama with a bone in his nose looking like some kind of a tribesman. He doesn't have a problem with these types of things. Michael Steele, in fact, himself admitted, he said, well, you know, when I go to some of these Republican events, I have to remind them, hey, I'm on your side.
Right.
So apparently he walks into the room and all these Republicans are like, holy crap, there's a black man
in
here.
He even pointed out that some of them are scared of him, which I thought was
hilarious. Their wallets.
I'm like, he's saying this on air? You're not supposed to admit that in public. We got a lot of callers on the line. I want to hear what they have to say. Lisa, talk to us.
Yes, thank you. I'm so glad you talking about this subject. And I mean, you guys have me laughing. You guys need your own late night show because everything you said just hit right on the nose. First of all, Michael Steele is an Uncle Tom. That's first and foremost.
I'm glad you said it. I didn't know if I could
say it.
Yeah,
we can't say that.
Well, God can say that.
I think that's offensive to Uncle Tom.
Yeah, it is.
Secondly, there's no way he can compare what Trent Lott said to what
Harry Reid.
Was the truth. What he was the truth. And not just for Republicans or racist whites. No. This is for blacks too. Yeah. A lot of blacks would not have voted for Jesse Jackson or an Al Sharpton. Mm-hmm. That's just the fact. Not just white people. It's black people. It's Mexican people. It's most people. They would not have. Because of the negative stereotypes, they would not have. Not that either one is more qualified, even though I think Obama is, but still, that's just a fact.
I remember.
I was also offended when I heard a comment that, what's her name?
Sarah Palin?
Somebody else? Here in D.C., Eleanor Holmes Norton. Okay. She says, well, I don't know what he meant by that. I'm like, lady, what are you talking about?
There's a politician's answer.
Yeah, right.
We know exactly what he meant by it.
And I
don't mind what he meant by it. I think it's true. I think it's a fact. It's not a very pleasant fact, which is why he didn't say it publicly.
It's not even an
he
unpleasant
said it in
fact.
Well, it is an unpleasant fact. It's an unpleasant fact.
Unpleasant fact is just a fact. Facts can't be unpleasant.
Sure they can be.
They cannot.
It's an unpleasant fact that there is racism more against dark-skinned blacks than light-skinned blacks. I think it's a fact. I don't think it's a pleasant fact.
Oh, you think the situation is unpleasant, not the fact. Okay, I'm just parsing. I'm parsing here.
Technical here, but
it's an unpleasant fact. But I remember, and I want to draw on Lisa's comment here. I remember I was a token white guy on Black Talk Radio for a year. XM Sirius, proud of that. But we were talking about when Barack Obama first came on the scene. Of course, he came on the scene at the Democratic National Convention. But we were talking about when he was thinking of running for president. And we talked at that time how different he was from Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. Now, we didn't mention the color of his skin. But we mentioned that Jesse Jackson...
Well, that wasn't a very thorough discussion, was it?
Maybe it wasn't.
You know, holy cow.
But the difference was, in my mind, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, ran as the African-American candidate. He was a candidate of black people trying to reach to the rest of America, whereas Barack Obama ran as the American candidate who happened to be black. He put his Americanness above his racial identity, and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson always put their racial identity above their Americanness, and that's why I thought Obama would win, and I don't think that statement is that different from what Harry Reid was saying.
Right. And in all fairness to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, they don't have another option because of what they have created and who they are is a particular character, and you're not going to get outside of that. You know, the funny thing about it is, so many people, and including the Clintons, tried to do things, and a lot of people discuss this in the black community, this reality, and this isn't even about necessarily even about the skin tone. A lot of people, the opponents of Barack Obama, tried to do things to turn him blacker.
Right.
To make, you know, like,
he's only half black to begin with.
Well, yeah, but it was like, well, let's tie him into Reverend Wright. Let's tie him to somebody who's we consider more ethnic, and maybe we can make him appear more ethnic. Even the feeling was there from his opponents and the Clintons, and people didn't come out and say it. The Republicans didn't say it. The Clintons didn't say it. Nobody came out and said it. But the feeling was there, and everybody knew what was going on. Let's try to paint him more ethnic, make him more black.
That's a very good point.
People won't vote for him.
Let me go on to the next call.
All right.
We got Justice on the air. Give us
last our truth, beauty, and now Justice.
Give us Justice, Justice.
Wait. You all my life.
Yeah.
Great day. This is a great show.
Thank you.
Great show. But some of the things that you're saying is absolutely true. This is one of the reasons why I didn't support Barack Obama in the presidency. I supported Cynthia McKinney. But here's the key question. Well, Barack Obama, which they say Dr. King was the dream, and he's the dreamer now, Barack Obama. Well, Dr. King was the dreamer.
But
and now
King
the
was the dreamer, right.
Is
right.
Barack Obama. But Barack Obama is not going to Atlanta Monday. What's up with that?
Hmm.
Anybody tell me What's going on with that?
Well, I think the answer is that Barack Obama has always put his Americanness above his African American.
I'll put something in there.
That doesn't mean he denies his African American.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for calling, incidentally.
Yeah, I do appreciate it.
But let me throw this in, and
no,
I think
but that's an interesting question.
Yeah, yeah, and I got to throw something in there that I think is important. I'll make it very brief.
And Obama's not going up to New York to the Rainbow Coalition either, is he?
There's a lot of black people that get mad at Barack Obama because he doesn't do more black things and talk about blackness and black positions. I believe just the opposite. I believe he has to be very careful and stay away from that stuff because his enemies want him to do that so they can do just what we're saying.
In other words, Senator Reid was right.
Yeah, I think Obama's best strategy is to stay away from that stuff and let Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and people that we've got plenty of people that do that. We need somebody in the White House that's I'm saying we as a nation, we need somebody in the White House that's going to address whatever issues need to be addressed. There's plenty of people. That's their job. They talk about race issues. I don't think he should do it.
Do you have a comment? Should we go on to the next caller?
Go to the next caller.
Next caller.
Terry doesn't have a comment.
It's a rare event. Let's celebrate it and move on. Ayize, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, I appreciate a really great show and
thank
great
you.
Dialogue.
Good.
Hey, I'm calling because I guess two main things. First of all, I'm somewhat disappointed this evening because I feel like you spent 20 minutes on a non-issue.
I tend to agree.
These folks say I think is foolish. And the things that we really need to focus on is, one, whoever is really against this two-party system, who are those folks that are looking to organize around it? Because really, the iron is hot. We need to strike right now. People are clear with the war issue, with this health care issue, with these billions for bankers, that it's really not two parties. It's really just one party that's, one coin with two different sides. And so who are the people that are really against it and looking to organize around the next party? And how, if there aren't people out there that are doing it, but I know there are,
I agree. I basically.
One last point. The second point is, it's apparent that we really need to just be organizing around financial reform. One of you all, I think, are big on that. And
yes,
again, it seems like
me.
We need to spend more time talking about organizing against this two-party machine and this financial reform than this non-issue about what they're calling folk or whatever.
And I agree with you, Ayize. Hope I pronounced that correctly. I agree with you, except for one point. And, that is the relevance of this discussion, even though we're having a lot of fun of it, and the event itself is not that important. In fact, it's unimportant. But the relevance of it is it does tell you a lot about the Republican Party and what
exactly
the Republican Party has become,
right,
which is really desperate and shocking and, in my opinion, to the point of being anti-American.
And frankly, that to me shows why there is a difference. You may not like the Democratic Party. You may not think Obama's progressive enough. Those are all very fair criticisms, and we certainly have done many shows and continue to do shows on the war and on health care and on bankers and everything. But the reason why I brought this up, frankly, is because I agree with Terry. It shows the depths to which the Republican Party has fallen. I don't think Michael Steele is that stupid.
No.
I don't think that he thinks that advocating Jim Crow and saying our country would be better off is Strom Thurmond, who I never think is important. And I never think you should fail to mention raped a 16-year-old black girl in the 1920s who couldn't say no. That this man who advocated segregation becoming president, I don't think Michael Steele thinks that's the same thing as Harry Reid saying that white people are, some white people are racist and using the word Negro.
Well, and it just shows the desperation they will go to.
There's a reason why Steele is saying this, and it's not to appeal to blacks because blacks know better. It's not to appeal to intelligent whites and Latinos and Asians because intelligent whites, Latinos, and Asians know better. It's to appeal to his base of ignorant white Southern folk who don't understand issues of race and basically say, the Democrats mention race, that's just as bad as the Republicans mentioning race.
And also,
the
reason that I think Michael Steele did it is I think Michael Steele personally is desperate in terms of his position.
Right.
Because he is not astounding any of the other Republican leaders, and they are not pleased with him, and he's grabbing at any straw he can get to try to get himself some national publicity.
Right.
I think it's that cheap. I think it's that cheap a shot.
Well, and I think Mark hit the nail on the head. It's just, they said something about race, we said something about race. It's
they're
good
equally
enough.
Bad.
Right.
They're
it, well, let's face it, yeah. They think anything black is bad.
Anytime so you say race, it's bad. Right. If you advocate Jim Crow or if you say the person's light-skinned, it's equally bad.
Right, yeah. Oh, my God. If you're for civil rights or against civil rights in either case.
You mentioned race.
You mentioned civil rights. That, yeah, how dare you.
Bad. Let's go on to Dwayne. Dwayne, welcome to the dialogue.
Thank you. I think this conversation is, like, absolutely absurd. This
uh-oh.
Is
the go ahead.
Where's the guy we want to hear?
Any real racial dialogue in society. You know, like, if the truth be told that if Senator Reid just happened to be Republican, he would have been skewered by now. So
I don't think so.
I just think this is ridiculous, like, how the media just keeps stirring up these racial tidbits that they go on.
Wait, Dwayne, you think he would have been skewered by right now? You don't really believe that Senator Lott's comment and Senator Reid's comments are equivalent, do you?
Absolutely.
Wait. Do you know what Senator Lott said? Because I could.
Senator Reid said is worse than what Senator Lott said. At least really? but let's room for it to be taken out of context.
Well, okay. Here's
can
what
I read.
Well,
I want to read for you.
Been talking about conservative values.
Dwayne,
and
hang on.
The Jim Crow laws. Just because the man's past has been.
Dwayne, hang on. I'm going to give you a chance to respond, but I want to read to you what Senator Lott said, and I want to read to you what Senator Reid said, and then I want to know if you still hold to what you just said. Senator Lott said on the 100th birthday of Senator Strom Thurmond, who ran for president, advocating segregation. That was his only issue.
Segregation.
He had no other issues that he ran on. He said, quote, "When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of it, and if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years either." That's Senator Lott's comment. Senator Reid's comment was that he felt that Barack Obama could win because he was a light-skinned man with no Negro dialect unless he wanted one. You think Reid was worse?
Absolutely, because Reid has no room for what is out of context, you know. Like,
well, sure there is.
The sheer fact is that if Senator Reid happened to be Republican, people would be up in arms. It's just a political game that people play out here.
Let me ask you this. What was offensive? Wait a minute.
Said in the earlier part of this program where Michael Steele only has his position because he's a black man.
I said it, and I'm black.
Somebody said that in the campaign, and that person was, I think during the presidential campaign, that person was derided for saying that the reason why Barack Obama's made it that far is because he's a black man.
Let me ask you a question. I want to ask you a serious question. Do you believe the fact that Michael Steele is black had anything at all to do with him getting the position that he's gotten in the Republican Party?
Do you think that Barack Obama...
You answered a question with a question. Answer my question and then ask yours. I asked a pretty simple question.
No, I'm not a Republican. I don't know how he got in there.
I didn't ask you. I said,
no
in your...
Wait,
give him some time.
Okay. So in your opinion, did Michael Steele's race have anything to do with his selection as Republican National Committee Chairman?
In my opinion, I don't know how he got in there.
So you don't know is your answer.
I know he's not going to be there for long. That's what I know.
So your answer is you don't know. Okay.
Answers, I don't know.
All right. We're coming up on our break. But thank you for your call, Dwayne, and thank you for having the audacity to oppose all three of us. We all think you're wrong, but I got to give you credit to have the courage to call in.
But don't forget,
I'm not sure all of us think he's wrong.
Oh, right. Yes, you do.
Oh, I do? Okay.
Look, we'll see you at Ben's Chili Bowl on February 2nd, and we can talk about
Ben's
that further,
door.
Buddy.
We'll be right back with more of Dialogue in the Raucous Caucus right after this.
WPFW, Pacifica, 89.3 FM, Jazz and Justice Radio.
Welcome back to Dialogue with the Raucous Caucus. I am your host today, Mark Levine, with
Garland Nixon
and
Terry D. Kester. And I don't think those were our children. Were those? Were you guys listening?
I don't have any children I know of.
Right. I hope not.
No, okay. I just
because it sounded like a lot of voices there.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
but
checking.
We've been talking about the difference between Senator Lott's comment and Senator Reid's comment. And I have to say, I'm shocked that Duane seems to think that they're equivalent to calling
He didn't say they were equivalent.
No, he said Reid was worse. Calling for Jim Crow to be reinstituted in America is less bad than referring to a man as light-skinned with no Negro
dialect. But in either case, the bigger question is, was either statement, let's grant that there's a difference. Let's grant that what Lott said is worse than what Harry Reid said. In either case, in this ridiculous political climate that we live in, is that sufficient reason that somebody should lose their post as a majority
leader? For Lott, yes, absolutely. Lott, when you advocate Jim Crow, when you say our country, here's what he said. I'll read it again.
I know. You don't have to read it again. We all know it by now.
Right, but when he said we wouldn't have had all these problems if blacks had just been kept in their place, that man should not be majority leader.
But that's not what he said.
Can I throw something in here, a little bit of a different perspective on Trent Lott?
Go ahead.
He's in a Republican Party.
He's from Mississippi.
He's a good singer.
Who replaced him?
Mitch McConnell.
Do you think he was any more sensitive to African Americans than the
reality? He was less openly racist.
Right. Yeah. Let me say this.
Yeah, more closet.
Can we have Trent back?
Yeah, I was about to say the reality is this. So you took a Republican leader out and you replaced him with another. You know what?
Are you saying that
I have to agree with Terry? What difference did it make?
Now, Garland, you can't have people saying that.
I know that, and technically I know that, but in reality. These guys, you took out, Heckel and put
frankly,
in Jekyll.
And frankly, I would rather have Trent Lott as a legislator. Not that I'm in love with Trent Lott, but rather than Mitch McConnell.
But you know what Trent Lott could actually work with Democrats
But you know what really offended me about Trent Lott's statement? He said, we voted
That's
for
right,
him.
That's right, we.
We voted
right,
for
America,
him.
White
and
Americans
myself,
are we.
Well, who the heck is we? And how come I don't fit into the we
white
category?
Mississippians. That's, what do you mean
we, buddy?
That's who he meant.
Yeah.
That's who he meant.
We voted for him.
Let's go on to Mark. Mark is on the line.
Talk to us, Mark.
A different Mark.
Oh, okay.
Terry.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead, Mark,
we
on the phone.
We can barely handle the Mark we have.
Two Marks is tough. I don't know. It hurts.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mark.
Listen, I was listening earlier to you guys talk, and I was just wondering if anybody on your panel was black.
Garland.
Yes.
Because I don't understand how people can compare Barack Obama, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and listen, this whole racial thing that they put out here is just nonsense. It's a distraction. Our deepest racial fears are established when we're children. We're sitting around listening to our aunts, uncles, grandparents talk about things that they had to endure in order for you to be there. Barack Obama and the typical black person in this country have absolutely nothing in common. By the time Barack Obama was 10 years old, he had probably already traveled around the world. Am I wrong?
You say that like it's a bad thing.
No, he's not saying that at all.
Listen to me. I'm talking in terms of this whole racial context that you're framing this stuff in, because the average black child in this country, by the time they're 19 years old, has barely left their own neighborhood.
We can all agree Barack Obama is not average in any way,
shape, or form. Barack Obama has more in common with white people than he does with
the average white person hasn't been around the country, the globe either by the time he's 18.
But I don't understand the point you're making. I don't understand your point.
The whole racial context and dynamic, it's a fallacy. It's all there for a distraction. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. Barack Obama was actually the only person that could have won that election, because the American public had been, think about it, they didn't want another white male in there after George Bush, right? They didn't want.
They had 42 of them before him, so I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know that people hated Bush because he was a white male.
Now in terms of diversity,
that wasn't the reason they hated
global.
Bush.
You know what I'm saying? And Barack Obama, think about it, isn't he the ultimate when it comes to diversity and globalization? When you talk about a young man who's been around the globe by the time he's 15.
That's why he's a world symbol. That's why he's a rock star. Yeah. That's why he got the Nobel Prize before he was even hardly president.
So my question to the black person on your panel is...
That would be me.
When you start looking at somebody like Al Sharpton mm-hmm. or Jesse Jackson, mm-hmm. and you look at their backgrounds, mm-hmm. and you understand that their ancestors, the people that, you know, that gave birth to them, they had to endure the lash.
Agreed.
They had to work like animals. They were treated subhumanly.
Agreed.
As opposed to Barack Obama, who, like I said, he's probably more in line with a white person's upbringing because he's had access.
But you know
the
what?
Things that the typical black person in this country would not have had access to.
Let me give you Mark. I want to make Garland Chester response. Mark,
from
Mark,
Al Strunk.
Okay.
Fair point. Let me hear Mark. Let me hear Garland's response.
Okay, a couple responses. Number one, yes, that's all true, but that doesn't mean that there's not a reality that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson couldn't get elected, and he could for the reasons that we talked about, number one. Number two, and this may be controversial to some people, but I would say this. To some extent, Barack Obama probably would have a more even perspective on America than would I. There was a lot of people who said, well, you know, his parents weren't you know, subjected to this thing, and they weren't slaves and all this kind of stuff. Okay, the reality is this. I can say that when I grew up, I heard all kind of terrible stories from my mother and my father and my grandfather for years and years of all the ungodly things that they went through, which to some extent have, for lack of a better word, poisoned my mind, to some extent have given me some perspectives that may not be valid today. They may be, but not as valid as they were at one time. Barack Obama didn't hear that. Didn't hear what I heard. So he's looking at what's going on today and dealing with what's going on today, as opposed to maybe somebody like me or you or some or another black people who, to some extent, we're dealing with what went on today, but we have the ghost of the past that we heard all the way growing up, or that we might have saw that he didn't see. So it's not necessarily a bad thing.
In my view, Barack Obama
but
is
you are agreeing with what Dwayne had to
say.
Well,
I wouldn't call it
white,
though.
Mark had to say.
I think he's unique. I mean, unique for whites, unique mm-hmm. for blacks. He's a unique American. He's the son of a woman from Kansas and an African man. That's not very common in America.
Yeah.
But it is, in my mind, the American dream.
Well,
it's all about immigrants and a mesh of cultures and diversity.
I think you're going a little over the top.
But you know another thing
that
demonstrates?
I think his story is part of what makes America.
The reason Barack Obama won for more than anything else is he is generally and has been and is a big member of the establishment and the status quo. And he spoke beautifully, and he was eloquent, and he is a superb speaker and an eloquent speaker. But basically, he won because he was part of the status quo.
And I feel just the opposite. But
I feel in between. Can we get to another caller?
Okay.
Let's go to Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
Welcome to Dialogue.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
Sure.
You know, I was going to make a comment on something, and then this last caller, it changed my whole perspective.
Okay.
I'm not even going to talk about Michael Steele. He's lost in paradise.
All right.
That's paradise?
The thing about Barack Obama, and this whole idea of race, you know, some people are calling it a fallacy. I'm sort of a Malcolm X kind of guy. You know, it wasn't that there were different races on the planet. And I've heard scientists and doctors, you know, try to pretend. I'm not a student that they aren't any race. I think they're all races, black races, white races. As Malcolm once said, there's no problem with the races. And that was the big problem. You know, instead of mm-hmm. somebody trying to turn it all into one, thank God they succeeded, I think there should be different races. We simply shouldn't have a problem with them. And what happens is, as America tries to fulfill its destiny, as so many people say, as soon as something happened, we forget that. And I heard you earlier talk about, you know, Obama should not go down to Atlanta. He should stay away from that, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Obama wasn't part of his platform the fact that he was going to deal with this racial issue. But every time someone gets into office, they throw that stuff to the curb. The problem is, why can't we as black people be black people? I called one time and I was talking about we don't learn black history. And I think the brother on the panel, he's talking about, oh, yeah, a whole bunch of it. You know, slavery, antebellum. You know what black history is? Hey, the time that we spent on those ships between the West African coast mm-hmm. and the East American coast and 100 years before that. Yeah, we know nothing about that, but we know a whole lot about what happened in Europe way before the Mayflower set sail.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. Slow down.
Go ahead, Terry.
When's the last time you've been in a schoolroom? I mean, I have taught in Alexandria schools. Now, if you think black history isn't taught today and hasn't taught, been taught for years and hasn't been taught very thoroughly, then you've obviously never been in a schoolroom. It is not being ignored. And one of the things that irritates me so damn much about this kind of conversation at all is so many of us want to hang on to the past, whatever the heck the past may be, whether it has to do with Strom Thurmond or whether it has to do with what was taught in the classroom. If we don't learn, and I mean this sincerely, if we don't learn as a country and as a people to solve problems in turn of what we can do today and what we can do tomorrow, but if we hang on to this past and debate this silly past, we are never going to solve a problem. Solutions begin today. Solutions begin with what you're going to do for the child tomorrow, black or white or whatever, and to hell with all this other nonsense.
And the last caller, isn't that kind of an example of what I was saying? You know, I detected there was some anger there. There was some resentment.
On me? On my part?
No.
Wait, shut up.
But you know what I'm saying? But and it's valid for people to have, for African Americans to have some anger and resentment.
Of course.
My point was.
But they got to have some facts behind it.
My point was, the reality is we probably get hung up in that a lot.
Yeah.
And what Terry was saying is, move forward. He's probably not as hung up. There's people that are skewing me for that, but he's probably not as hung up as I would be. And I don't even consider myself hung up.
I think we need both. I'm the moderate here tonight.
Yeah.
I'm the moderate.
I'm the moderate. In my view, you can never forget the past. Those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. We need everything from a museum on the mall, which is finally coming, talking about slavery. There's a big
difference between forgetting the past
and living in it. That's why I'm in the middle. My point is you don't forget the past, but at the same time, you got to move on. We're going to move on to the next caller. Kim.
Oh, we're glad you're here.
Welcome to the Rockets Caucus. Kim.
Gentlemen, wonderful, wonderful job as you always do.
Thank you, Kim.
And I'm kind of torn because I do agree with some of the callers that were being deflected off some of the more important issues.
Uh-huh.
But what I think this points out, it is an important issue. We cannot ignore it. But I would hope that some of our strongest and most vociferous Democrats would just squash it, let it make it go away, because we never seem to be able to kind of spin our things as strong as Republicans have spin it against us. So I'd love for them to just say, this is what it was, it's done, let's move on to the important thing. And then the other thing is, I do hear that the callers are saying, well, there's some issue with how we deal with our past as blacks. And I know Garland said, well, go to the past, maybe that's what's kind of messing up how some folks are thinking about it.
Influencing.
But I'm in my 50s, and I think it would be goals from the past, but also lessons from the past.
Mm-hmm.
To put it in perspective, it's all important. And I love you guys. I'm glad you're talking about it.
Thank you so much, Kim.
I'll tell you this. I think the Democrats have done really all they need to do. Harry Reid has given a profuse apology. Frankly, in my mind, even a bigger apology than was even necessary. Barack Obama accepted the apology. Everyone will move on. But before we move on from this moment, the reason why, and you can blame me if you want, because it was my topic tonight, my choice. The reason why I brought it up tonight, in my view, was to show how far the Republican Party had descended when they can't tell the difference, when they're African-American chairman supposedly can't tell the difference between a man who advocated Jim Crow, Strom Thurmond, a man who raped a 60-year-old girl, black girl, in the 1920s, and a guy, a 70-year-old man using the archaic term Negro.
And that's the only place where you, not the only place, but the place where you and I agree, Mark. The only significance of this at all is not what was said or how it was said or whether he apologized or whether Obama accepted it, but the only significance is what the Republican Party and Michael Steele are doing today.
Right.
And what they're doing today is pathetic.
And it's what they've been doing for a long time, and that's this. Any opportunity to seize, to somehow twist and contort any issue to make it appear as though the Democrats have done something wrong is what they do. It's just sad. You know, I've often said what Barack Obama should do in the morning is get up and say, I'm going to take this position, the opposite of what he's going to do.
Say, and I'm going to do
this. And when the Republicans say, we condemn that, and come out in the afternoon and say, you know something? They're
right. You're
right.
They would condemn him as a flip-flopper, Garland.
So you guys are right. Come out and say, I want a press conference with Mitch McConnell. I put his arms around and said, I've seen the light.
Garland, they would then condemn him as a flip-flopper.
Well, they would reverse their position.
As a flip-flopper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go on to Tim. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hello. Yes, I definitely want to suggest to anyone that acts like this issue that what Harry said is not truth to take a perusal through Freedmen's Library at Howard University.
because there was a time when the paper bag rule was very real, and that was something that we did to ourselves, mm-hmm. as black people, mm-hmm. as black men. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side, what I'm saying is what Trent Lott did, he's speaking to policy, saying we as America made a mistake. Now, I'm a black man. I guess I'm a mistake. You mm-hmm. know, and
he really thought equality for blacks was a mistake.
Yeah, your freedom is a mistake.
Right. That's what he said.
Exactly. And it amazes me that people want to make light of him, saying, well, it's philosophy 101, when you study logic, two coke is a fallacy based upon you're another. The bottom line is what Harry Reid said is in no way comparable to the systematic degradation of the conservative side of America to what I have endured as a black man, as mm-hmm. an educated black man. And people like J.C. Watts, Armstrong Williams, we can go down the list, people who will sell out. But see, Michael Stewart's not speaking about them.
No, he's certainly not. And he also didn't condemn Rush Limbaugh when he did Barack the Magic Negro.
Of course not. Of course not.
Right.
Tim, I love you all.
The three of you couldn't agree with you more. That was a terrific call. 202-588-0893. You have a quick comment?
Yes, let's not forget to remind our listeners, February 2nd, 7 o'clock, where are we going to be?
We're going to be at Ben's Next Door.
Right next to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Live show.
You can watch us take jabs at each other in person.
It's going to be better than mud wrestling.
It's a little bloody, but we survive.
And you can get good food, and you can get good beverage, and you can have meet and greet afterwards.
Afterwards,
and we're taking questions from the audience.
Absolutely. In fact, as I think we're only taking questions from the audience that day.
At that
so
time,
if you
want
to challenge us on February 2nd, you
got
to come
there.
Do it in person.
And Mark has to leave his ski mask and his hockey mask and his machete home that day.
Why? I like that mask.
You might scare the audience.
Let's go on to Jill. Jill, welcome to the Rockets Caucus.
Hello, how are you guys this evening?
We're good.
We're okay. Thrilled.
Great. I'm enjoying your conversation.
Thank you.
I would like to say this, though, about the topic at hand, and that is that personally we all know that the statements that were made by this gentleman, 9 times out of 10 was true. Okay, now, I mean, we all are living
statement.
Here in America, and we mm-hmm. do understand the race issues, such as, number one, assimilating. Number two, we've always had that issue of the white people rather accepting the lighter skinned people before
and
they will
African Americans as well.
And we know that is the case, and so it trickles down to us as African Americans, and that is what we call interrace racism, which is the thing that I'd like to speak to. I'm listening to all the different radio stations, and I said, well, heck, let me turn to PFW because I know
we're on
that
point.
But they're all commenting, and they're very up in arms, and they're very angry, but it's all in the context of assimilating, you know. No one has said, you know what, wait a minute. The whole reason why this comment is getting as much airplay and it's as significant as it is because we as black people, after 200 years of bondage and I don't know how long of being free, that we have not stepped up to the plate and dealt with intelligently this issue of inter-race racism. If we deal with it, if we annihilate it within our own communities, then there will be nothing for other races to observe about us.
Jill, you're dead on.
I want to ask you, Jill.
Very good, Jill.
Jill, you're terrific. I want to ask you to give me personally, obviously I don't mean to name names, but how you see this interrace racism within the African-American community.
Well, I will tell you this. I'm in my 40s, and growing up, it wasn't easy. You know, I went to a school where we had a lot of the lighter-skinned children because I went to a private school. And, I mean, my Lord, if something was to be missing in the classroom, if there was something, I don't give a damn what it was, the first person that they would look to was me.
Because you were darker skinned.
Because of the color of my skin.
Where did you grow up, Jill?
I'm curious. And it was all because of the texture of my hair.
What?
I was falsely accused of many things. And then as I grew older, it didn't matter. I was mistreated. Although I'm a very intelligent woman, I got a lot to offer. Still, I'm dealing with this interrace racism crap when it comes to my own black men.
Well, I know.
So it's there, it's alive, it's well, and it's very, very hurtful. And the truth of the matter is that we as African Americans, we as black people, I don't care what part of the diaspora we're from, if we're of African descent, we got to pull together and we have got to deal with and annihilate and stamp out this issue. Because what we're doing is that we are helping with this genocide. We are throwing away perfectly good people. All based on the fact that your oppressors taught you that it's not beautiful to be dark. It's not beautiful to have textured hair, your thick nose and your thick lips, somehow that's only sexual. It's not beautiful. It's not to be respected.
Jill, beautiful. Your passion, I got to say.
Wow. I
mean,
feel
you
your
very,
passion,
very much
your
for calling.
Pain, your pain, your passion, your honesty, God. And very astute.
You know, and what she's saying, I actually know a black woman who's very, very dark, who told me that when she was young, when she was in high school, she thought, when I grow up, I'm going to marry a really, really light-skinned man because I was treated so bad, I don't want to have kids as dark as me because I don't want my children to be treated as bad as I was. Now, how sad is that? And of course, she was talking about the both communities,
right.
both
white and black.
And in the black community.
And the incredibly sad thing is the thing that Republicans are up in arm about is actually Harry Reid telling the truth.
That needs to be told.
That, frankly, you wouldn't think the 7-year-old man would understand the intricacies of interracial racism, both among whites and blacks. Frankly, it shows him to be far more astute than I ever gave him credit for.
It's a very impressive call by Jill. Very courageous.
Thank you for your passion. And keep that passion because it's going to save a lot of lives.
And Jill, please come to Ben's Chili Bowl.
Yeah.
We would love to meet you.
Tuesday, February 2nd. Let's go on to Green. Green, welcome to Dialogue.
Hello, how are you?
We're good.
Fine.
You know, I was originally going to, I originally called to offer succor to Garland about the brother they called, completely missed the point. And I wanted to say that it's totally irrelevant how Republicans or even white people take
Harry Reid's comment.
Exactly. But it is important because it opens up the conversation on how our perceptions are based on white supremacy, which is what Jill was talking about, and I really appreciate the sister.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
But I don't want to talk about it now.
What do you want to talk about, Green? Okay. What do you want to talk about?
No, I heard one of you. I don't know which one. It wasn't Garland who said that we have to, stop thinking about the past and
That's
that we
me.
Have to live in the moment.
Yes.
Well, the only place we can live is in the moment.
Yep.
We don't live in the future, or maybe the only place we live is in the future, actually.
Well,
because
yeah.
the moment, when is
gone.
Okay, but what I want to say is all solutions start with the past. And as far as black history being taught in the Arlington public schools, I doubt if black history is being taught. And I say that because what's usually passed off as black history is American history. And they include parts that black people, that African people have played in American history. But
that's not true. That's not true.
Well,
I mean, go to a public school in Alexandria. I don't know about all the other school districts, but go to Alexandria. Walk into an elementary school. Take a look at the textbooks. It's right there.
What are they teaching, may I ask?
What?
What are they teaching, he asked.
What are they teaching?
They're teaching
African history?
Yes, they're teaching African history, African American history, West Indies American history, et cetera, et cetera.
Let me say this.
This is my point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually when the history of black people or African people is talked about, then it's always in relation to European history. For example, in America, it's all about it's not about pre-Columbian or pre-North.
Green, let me say this. I got to move on to the last caller.
Also, but I like to say this.
Real quick.
And our history goes back further.
Of course it does.
Than any nation in Europe.
Here's the thing, Green.
We have to go beyond the Roman and Greek.
Green, let me see if I can respond here. I think that any American history class is going to focus mostly on the point where all of us came together. We are a country of many different peoples from many different places. Heck, the Native Americans who were here before blacks or whites came to these shores have a long and varied multi-millennium history. Always the focus will be and should be, in my view, on the point where we all came together. That doesn't mean there shouldn't be some discussion of pre-American
pre-American Asian history as well. You know, American history is not well taught. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, American history is 90% myth.
And, you know, I mean, it's atrocious what is taught in 60%. General. But it's not because one group is left out or not. It's a whole other reason on why American history is desperate. And I also want to say, yeah, maybe problems come from the past, but you cannot solve any past problem. You can only solve the problem that is for you, before you right now.
I'll tell you this. I think it was Faulkner that said history is not even the past. They say that the past is past. It's not even past. In other words, it's always part of our present.
We got one more caller.
I tried to get to that last caller. And I'm sorry, David.
Marcus,
we tried to get to you. We really did. Can we still get David?
Yeah.
No.
Call back next week. Hey, David, come to Ben's Chili Bowl on February 2nd.
It's next door.
Ben's next door, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. And we will personally apologize. How's that?
And you can come and talk to us and grab us personally and harangue us into the night.
Terry!
Harangue Terry. He deserves it.
Yeah, right. And then when we finish the show, we are going into the streets. So be
there. Take to the streets, Terry. We couldn't have a show.
I don't know, Terry. It depends how cold it is.
I don't know. Well, colder it is. I ain't taking it to the streets.
Tonight's show was engineered by Jasmine Blackman and T. Sturdivant in the studio. Garland, where can folks reach you?
Just, Facebook, Garland Nixon, GARLANDNIXON, or garlandn@gmail.com.
Okay. Terry?
Terry Kester, and the email is terrytdk@aol.com. Drop me a line if you agree or disagree. And also, we have a Facebook page in general, right?
WPFW Dialogue.
And now that we have that photo taken tonight, we're probably going to get that photo on the page.
We do need to
don't
get
tell
that.
Me. That'll surely run them away.
You also should get a Raucous Caucus page, Garland. Yeah. Garland is the master of Facebook. You know,
the neat thing about being at Ben's is see if they can figure out which one is which.
Oh, I think they can figure out which one is good. I don't think we're that hard to pick out of a crowd, Terry. But it'll be interesting if someone comes up to me and says, you know, Terry, I appreciate it. I'm like, that's not me. I'm too cold for Mark to go out in the street.
No way. I don't think anybody's going to mistake either of you guys for me.
I don't know how many times I'm called Garland.
Garland, I mean, get me out there in the sun. I'll get pretty dark.
I got to tell Terry, in this weather, I think I'll take to the window. I'll turn the thermostat up and I'll take to the window and I'll wave while you're protesting economic unfairness.
Every show, every single Tuesday, I post the night show on my website, which is marklevineradio.com.
In case you missed one single word.
Because I know that if you missed one single word, you're going to want it. Because sometimes we talk over each other.
I never interrupt.
Terry and Garland interrupt all the time. And so if you miss some of our words over each other, just go to marklevineradio.com, MarkLevineRadio.com. This tonight's show will be posted there in a couple hours. You can check it. You can play it for your friends. You can podcast it. You can send it places.
You can tell your friends, hey, these guys are nuts. They're insane.
You
got to hear that.
And they can go listen. Our show, please tell your friends. We're here every Tuesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. And you can meet us, of course, at Ben's Next Door.
February 2nd, live show.
God, keep saying Ben's Chili Bowl.
Because
it's
I'm thinking about the food.
To Ben's Chili Bowl.
Thinking about them half smokes.
Live show, 7 to 8 p.m.
Questions from the audience.
Absolutely.
Intelligent answers from me and Mark and Garland
and
will pitch
you,
in.
And I got to keep you guys from behind the bar before the show starts.
You can Facebook me, too. I'm Mark Levine, MarkLevine. And really, tell your friends. We've had a lot of great calls tonight. I got to tell you, it's Jill.
Jill wins for the best call we've ever had on this show.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, at first, she was very calm about it, and I asked her to tell some personal stories, and then she really gave her passion.
She really did.
And I got to say, Jill, thank you for that passion.
Amen.
Because that's that kind of passion that it is exactly what we hope for each and every night.
It makes the point.
Thank you for listening.
Make.
Every Tuesday at 7, on behalf of Garland Nixon and Terry Kester, this is Mark Levine signing off.